Blog Talk Radio.
I want to wish a very happy birthday to the wonderful Lilith Penn, who does a lot more for Secular Talk than anybody even knows. So, Lilith, happy birthday. Hope you have a great birthday. Hopefully we bring a smile to everybody's face with the entire show that I got lined up for you here. So, geniuses at CNN are stumbling all over themselves trying to figure out how to cover Donald Trump. And, they're failing. Don Lemon's got some thoughts for us. Oh, boy. That's never good. And then also Israel is going full speed ahead in their efforts to become a pariah state. I got a lot to say about that. And also Noam Chomsky weighs in on why young people shouldn't even be all that upset. Even with Donald Trump winning and with the long fight we have ahead, you shouldn't be all that upset. And he's going to explain why in a way that only Noam Chomsky can. So we got all that stuff to get to, and we have much more to get to. Today's a jam-packed show. So without further ado, let's get started. And we're going to do that by viciously and ruthlessly mocking CNN. The geniuses over at CNN had a conversation on how to cover Donald Trump, and it's safe to say that Trump has left them totally baffled and utterly clueless. So look at how lost they are in the weeds in this conversation. Check it out.
Listen, I'm not a news executive, but if I were, I would say I would not cover his tweets.
So
I would,
I disagree with the tweets I cover.
I agree with you, by the way.
You do?
I wouldn't cover them at all.
You wouldn't cover them at all because that is his way of communicating.
Well, no. If I'm in your chair, I cover the tweets.
Well,
from my chair, they come through my Twitter stream, and I do not touch them.
But I think that I wouldn't because unless I hear it from his mouth at a press conference or a representative, then I would not take it as gospel. I wouldn't cover it.
So Don's thinking is, correct me if I'm wrong, if he doesn't speak directly to us, then if he has ignored, essentially, the tweets, then he will have a press conference.
Of course he will. He hates being ignored. He likes seeing him. Come on.
Here's the general sense I get from that. The CNN anchors, on some level, know how terrible they are at their job. They know that they suck. They know that Donald Trump is a buffoon who should have been stopped. And they also probably know, on some level, that the way they covered him all along, every step of the way, contributed to his rise and contributed to him being viewed in a more positive sense. So they know that, and they're struggling with that. They don't know exactly what to do with that information and how to proceed. And what results is a funny conversation like you just saw where it almost feels more like they're talking about Donald Trump like he's their boyfriend. Like, you know, Donald Trump is the significant other of every CNN host. And they're like, well, you know, should we stalk his Twitter account or should we not stalk his Twitter account? You know, I don't know, but I think he's up to no good. I think he's up to doing something. Well, I think you should ignore him because if you ignore him and then he comes back, well, I mean, that's what will happen. He can't stand being ignored. So if you don't cover the tweets, then maybe he'll do a press conference. And if he does a press conference, then maybe we can cover him in a very responsible way. What are you saying? Okay, here's how you do it. He's the fucking president-elect of the United States of America. If he says something newsworthy in a tweet, of course you cover it. If he lets you know, hey, here's the direction I'm going to take policy, of course you cover it. What you don't cover are the tweets that are nonsense and meaningless and not about policy and just him getting into a random feud with fucking Carrot Top or somebody else on Twitter, which he's known to do. So that's the breakdown. If it's a tweet that's not newsworthy and it's shit that's like TMZ-level garbage, well, then obviously you don't cover it. But if it's something policy-related, yes, you cover it. He's going to be president of the United States. What are you going to do, give him the cold shoulder? Like, that doesn't make any sense. He's going to be the president. But they don't know. And this goes back, you know, my main thesis on the idiots at CNN. They don't know what they're doing. They're all they do is read the prompter. It's like Ron Burgundy. He'll read anything you put in the prompter. So they don't know enough about the world we live in and about politics and about all the things, economics, all the things they should know about. So you have to fill the dead air with something. And they fill it with false equivalence, so fake neutrality, where they give the Democrats and the Republicans equal credit, 50-50 all the time, establishment talking points, and sensationalism. That's all they got. They have no, they don't know dick about policy. They can't do real policy analysis. And they can't explain to the American people, hey, this is something that's going to hurt you. This is something that's going to help you. Hey, that's corruption. Hey, let's call out the people in power. Let's try to get a government that's responsive to the needs of the American people. They don't know how to do that. So what do you get? You get what you just saw. You get Don Lemon and a bunch of CNN idiots sitting around.
Oh, no, you know, should we cover his tweets? I don't know. Should we cover his tweets? That's a good question. Let's think about it. Let's talk about it for five fucking minutes and figure out what to do. And you see it. I mean, you can see Don Lemon's like, well, what if we don't cover it? Then he's forced to have a press conference.
Okay, so should he have a press conference? Yes. But does that mean, like, what, you don't cover him until he has a press conference in order to try to make him do a press conference? No, because whatever he says in the press conference is going to be just as fucking incoherent and disgusting as whatever shit he'd say on his Twitter account. It's going to be the same garbage. He was just tweeting today about how Israel's been left behind by America, and that's wrong, and that's not okay. And what do you think he's going to say in a press conference? He's going to say the same kind of nonsense. So cover it. Yes, you can cover it if it's policy related, if it's related to what he's going to do in office. But that's the thing is, CNN, they walked right into this trap because during the primary and then during the general, they managed to cover all the wrong stories about Donald Trump, all the wrong stories. So the one that always sticks out in my mind is the naughty language. How they've done segments where, you know, they show other Republicans hammering Trump because he says naughty things. And I thought, you're only helping the guy. That is not the reason why you should dislike Trump, because he says fuck and he says shit and he talks like a normal human being. No, the reason you should dislike Trump is because he says, hey, we should take out their families, the terrorists' families. Okay, that would make him a terrorist. I think that deserves a little bit more coverage. What do you think? You know, you talk about how he repeatedly said, I'm going to torture, quote, even if it doesn't work, how he wants to pull out of the Geneva Conventions, how he said we should lower wages. I mean, these are things that deserve endless amounts of coverage, but that didn't get the coverage. What got the coverage was anytime he used naughty language or, you know, he said Jeb's a puppet to his donors, and they would say, he's breached decorum. How dare he breach decorum on stage with such honorable gentlemen? No, but that's the stuff that's actually good about him. So when you cover the stuff that's good about him as if it's bad, people go, well, maybe he's not so bad. And all the actual shitty stuff, you got nothing to say because it's policy related. So that's the downside, is that these guys are lost, man. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know how to – it's like the whole – the resistance thing. You know, you have Think Progress, which is just a Democratic partisan hack organization at this point, which is sad because at one time I thought they did decent work. You have Keith Olbermann, you know, the resistance he has is his Twitter handle and, you know, in the little picture written above his head, and he's wearing the flag like, oh, yes, I'm the resistance. And then you go see what he's saying about Trump. It's all, you know, Vladimir Putin is now the president of the United States. He's got a puppet in Donald Trump, and he's going to do whatever he wants. This is a hostile takeover, and this is a declaration of war. That's your resistance? Your resistance is red baiting. Your resistance is fear-mongering about Russia. Your resistance is something that no grandma in Cleveland sitting around going, you know, I can't afford to put food on the fucking table, but goddamn Vladimir Putin. No, they're worried about things that affect their lives. They're worried about policy. They're worried about, you know, how they can pay the bills. And your ass is lost in the wilderness talking about Vladimir Putin and a declaration of war, and we got a, the Kremlin is now in Washington, D.C. What the fuck are you saying? That resistance ain't going to work, bitch. But that's the sense I get. You watch CNN, you watch, you know, Keith Olbermann, you watch partisan Democrats. That's all they're doing. They don't know how to attack him. They don't know how to attack him because they never really cared about policy. So now it's all, I swear to you, there was a, Judd Legum, one of the guys from Think Progress, tweeted the other day, the real story of what happened with Ivanka Trump on the plane. Because there was some douchebag who apparently, you know, was like, your father's ruining the country, and she felt threatened or whatever, so they kicked this guy off the plane. They really are so hacky that they decided, we need to do a piece about this, and we need to show the other side of it. We need to show the side of the guy who was, you know, allegedly threatening her or made her feel unsafe. Why are, like, just because he's Donald Trump and just because she's Ivanka Trump doesn't mean that literally everything they've ever done and ever said needs to be, you know, you need to be against it. And if you do that, it's boy who cried wolf. People are going to roll their eyes when there are real things to go after Donald Trump for. When there's real arguments against him. Oh, my God, he fucking just appointed Goldman Sachs to somebody from Goldman for the Treasury Secretary. That is insanity. But you were busy crying wolf, so now people look at that and they go, who knows, maybe he's qualified. So you got to focus on the right things, and if you don't focus on the right things, you're helping him, you're not hurting him. So this conversation about, should we cover his tweets? I don't know. Should I do a press conference? Oh, you just look like a bunch of butthurt significant others who are trying to figure out how to handle their unruly boyfriend. It's almost mission accomplished for exactly what he wanted. Okay. Now, we move along. So here we go. Israel is going full speed ahead in their efforts to become a rogue pariah state. They're not already that. So the New York Times explains here, undeterred by a resounding 14-0 defeat at the United Nations, Israel's government said Monday that it would move ahead with thousands of new homes in East Jerusalem and warned nations against further action, declaring that Israel does not, quote, turn the other cheek. Just a few days after the United Nations Security Council voted to condemn Israeli settlements, Jerusalem's municipal government signaled that it would not back down. The city intends to approve 600 housing units in the predominantly Palestinian eastern section of town on Wednesday in what a top official called a first installment of 5,600 new homes. Wow. So in other words, they are proving the point of the United Nations. They are proving the point of the Security Council. All they said was, hey man, you're being a rogue state. You need to abide by international law. You need to stop doing occupation and apartheid. You need to stop taking more and more Palestinian lands and building more and more illegal settlements. All they're saying is, hey Israel, follow the law. And it was a toothless resolution. It was just, I mentioned this yesterday, but the argument is, hey, I'm just saying. Like, that's what the resolution is. I'm just saying. Maybe you should follow international law. They were so outraged by that that you would think the international community had literally declared war on Israel. But today we actually learned that Israel, Netanyahu, told New Zealand behind the scenes, hey, if you're in favor of this, we consider it a declaration of war. What? So when they say, hey, you should follow international law, how dare you say that? Now I think you declared war on me. Yeah, Netanyahu, that's like New Zealand really fired a shot at somebody in the IDF's face. How stupid are you? I mean, like a fucking crybaby, man. It's unbelievable the way that this guy acts. And then, so hold on, if that's a declaration of war, if it's a declaration of war for New Zealand to say, hey, you should follow international law, then how are the Palestinians supposed to take it when you keep stealing more and more of their land? Is that not a declaration of war? No, it's cool. Sit back, relax, take it easy. I'm just going to keep taking your land and keep doing settlements. So wouldn't they, according to your own logic, wouldn't they be totally in the right to respond militarily, to respond with force? Because it's self-defense. You're declaring war on them. You're stealing more and more of their land. No, that's not a declaration of war. What Israel does to Palestine, but it is a declaration of war when New Zealand says to Israel, hey, man, just follow international law. When the UN says, hey, dude, come on, just stop being a dick. Now they say, no, we're going to prove you right. And by the way, all the fucking... Remember during the Iraq War when they kept moving the goalposts? So first it was Saddam Hussein did 9/11. And then it was, okay, no, he didn't do 9/11, but he has weapons of mass destruction. And then it was, okay, that's not true either, he's just a bad guy. And then what was the final argument they made? The final argument was, he violated international law. He violated international law, what are we going to do? And he's snubbing his nose at the international community. So obviously, America needs to go in there and do an invasion, and I think the region is ripe for regime change. This is what they said. This is not my position. This is the government's position. That's what they said. That's what they did. So why is it not the same for Netanyahu? Why is it not the same for Israel? He keeps violating international law. Look, what are we going to do? We gave him a million opportunities. He keeps violating international law, and now the UN was crystal clear, 14-0 vote, stop building settlements. This is a disgusting, flagrant, overt, blatant violation of international law. You have to stop it. And even after that, the final warning, what does he do? He goes, thank you. Now I'm going to speed up with it. So according to the logic of the U.S., this is a rogue, pariah state. This is a terror state. And they're ripe for regime change. Except they're not going to say that, and that's not going to happen because they're our ally. So they can largely get away with whatever they want to get away with. And again, if you're so outraged at how dare the U.S. do this, we are so angry at you, then return the $38 billion we just gave you, bitch. What, you don't have to take that. You're so mad at us. We're so bad. We're so evil. We're so anti-Semitic. The international community, everybody in every country obviously hates Jews so much. Then why would you accept anything from us? Go ahead. Give back the $38 billion. Give back the military aid. Give back Iron Dome. But you're not going to do that. You're not going to do that. It's time for the U.S. to get tough. You think this is tough? This ain't tough. This is the bare minimum you could do. All you're doing is acknowledging that they're violating international law here. That's it. So what you should do, and this is why Obama had to do this earlier, man. See, he waited till the end to do a symbolic gesture, and I'm out. Okay, put me on the record. I'm not totally callous towards the Palestinians, and I'm out. But see, now you get Netanyahu's response, and Netanyahu's going, oh, you want to play that game? Fine. And then he's now building more settlements. Imagine Obama did this in his first term. Then what? Well, then he has leverage. Then he can say, hey, I'm not going to give you billions of dollars in aid. How about that? Hey, maybe I do sanctions on your ass. How about that? Hey, maybe we vocally support BDS. Maybe we propose a resolution not just saying you're violating international law, but saying we are in favor of a Palestinian state at the UN. If Obama did this earlier, he could have done those things, but he didn't do it earlier, and my guess is because he didn't want to go that far. He wanted to do the symbolic gesture and say, I'm not totally callous against Palestinians, and then move along. And by the way, there's a lot of misinformation about this, too. How many resolutions did Obama do that were critical of Israel? One. How many? George Bush, I think, did six. There was either six or nine. And the past few presidents, even Republican presidents, they did resolutions that were more critical of Israel. Because in recent times, criticism of Israel is now... Oh, forget it. I mean, it's basically like a fundamentalist religion where if you criticize it, oh, blasphemy. That's what that is. Nobody criticizes them. And then they use the same tire arguments. Only democracy in the Middle East. Only democracy in the Middle East. And they say that as if, like, it's such a smear hack argument because they're trying to imply that that's why you don't like them. You don't like them because they're a democracy. That's your problem, is that you're just a fascist and that they're democratic and you don't like them because they're democratic. Or, again, the other argument is liberal values. You don't like them because they abide by liberal values. I don't know why you do that. Maybe you just hate Jews. Maybe it's anti-Semitism. Again, that's overt sometimes. Hillary Clinton said people who support BDS, that's anti-Semitism. So, but obviously those arguments are hack because the argument isn't, oh, my God, you single out Israel so much that's unfair. Ask anybody who's in favor of this resolution, any liberal in the U.S. who's in favor of this resolution against Israel. Hey, should we also maybe do a resolution against Saudi Arabia because they say all atheists are terrorists and they treat women like second-class citizens and they behead people for apostasy and sorcery and drug smuggling? Every single one of them is like, yeah, yeah, resolution against them too, resolution against everybody who violates international law. So they try to make it seem like, oh, you're a hypocrite because you don't want to do resolutions against other states, just the Jews in Israel. No, I want to do them against all of them. But then again, dig deeper and call them out, and what will you find out? They are in favor of sanctions against Iran and Saudi and all these other countries, but not for Israel. Why? Because only democracy in the Middle East, liberal values. You keep screaming liberal values as a shield to do illiberal things. No, there's not a single liberal on the planet that's not going to give you, you know, more credit for your domestic policy. Yes, you're much more free and much more open in your borders than Saudi Arabia or Iran. There's no denying that. You treat women better. You treat gays better. We get it, and we agree with you. But that doesn't override, that doesn't give you a pass for what you're doing to the Palestinians. And you think it does. You think, well, look, liberal enough, democratic enough, therefore, if you single us out, if you say that we're violating international law, well, then you must be against the liberal values. No, we're against the illiberal things you do that you shield with liberal values. That's the term pinkwashing. Hey, we're so for gay rights that don't talk about it when we bomb Gaza and over 80% of the people dead are civilians. No, but we're on to your trick, dipshit. We know it's a trick. We know that when you say gay rights, liberal values, and then you keep building illegal settlements and kicking Palestinians off their land, that ain't okay. You got to do both. Care about liberal values, care about gay rights, and care about Palestinians, and try to get a two-state deal. You don't want a two-state deal. So if you don't want it, I would force your ass into it. It's that simple. If we cut off your billions of dollars in aid, if we support BDS, if we sanction you, if we say, hey, we support a Palestinian state at the UN, we will force you to make a deal because it's very simple. You can make all the pain stop if you just do a deal. If you do a deal, we go back to giving you some aid. It's that simple. So, okay, billions of dollars you're not going to get. Well, do you really want those billions of dollars? Okay, then make a deal. Make a deal, and then you can have peace. And by the way, that's the other aspect and the other angle of this conversation, is that everybody who's for the resolution is being spun as anti-Israel. No, Netanyahu is anti-Israel because he's making it much less safe for the future. You keep on stealing Palestinian land. You keep on taking it. And then you go, oh, I can't believe there was a terror attack last week. I can't believe that there's a violent response when you try to take somebody's shit. Please, man, it's so obvious what you're doing. So you're putting the people in Israel in more danger. So maybe the people who are saying, hey, you got to stop violating international law, maybe they're actually looking out for your best interest. But no, it's a rogue pariah state, and look how they're acting now. So they should be treated like apartheid South Africa until they get their fucking shit together and until they make a deal. And again, that's not to say other countries shouldn't be disciplined when they do bad things. I'm in favor of that. But stop deflecting and obfuscating the conversation by bringing up the other countries to shield Israel from criticism, because they deserve every bit of the criticism. You got to get them to make a deal. And he wants to go down this path. He wants to snub his nose again at the UN. So what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? You're just going to sit there and take it? Is that what you're going to do? A bunch of bitches if you sit there and take it. You got to do BDS. You got to side with BDS. You got to isolate them. They already started self-isolating. They started doing self-BDS. We're not going to do deals with countries that did this to us. Okay. Well, how about the rest of the countries that you want to keep relations with? How about they cut their ties with you? How about that? How about you don't have anybody to trade with anymore? Well, then what happens? The rich people, the elites in Israel are going to go to the government. Whoa. Maybe it's time to do a deal, motherfucker. I'm hemorrhaging money here. What are you talking about? We can't trade with anybody now? This is exactly what happened in apartheid South Africa. When you isolate them and they're away from the world, well, then that affects everybody's wallet, and you can't keep the economy going that way, so you're forced to make a deal. This is what you do. You don't let them take more land and then snub their nose at you. Don't be ridiculous. Okay. Okay, let's see what time it is. It is time for the first break, motherfuckers. Let's Let's take that break, and then when we come back, I got a lot to say about Democracy Now's anniversary. They had Noam Chomsky on, and he spoke about why young people shouldn't be too worried. So we'll talk about that. And Michael Savage is a well-known lunatic radio host, and man, he's got some stuff to say about Trump that is genuinely unsettling. I mean, you kind of expect the craziness from these people, but somehow it gets worse and worse. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back with that and much more.
the left, the left. You will fake so one bone death you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island.
Alright, we're back, bitches. Alright, let me set this up for you. Talk a little bit about Noam Chomsky and his comments on Bernie Sanders. Democracy Now! Had a great event for their anniversary recently. We love Democracy Now! They had Democracy Now! Had Noam Chomsky and Harry Belafonte do a talk together. This was at some anniversary event. And Noam had some wise words about Bernie Sanders' movement and the future.
And if you look at the younger voters, the people who will shape the future, they were overwhelmingly anti-Trump and even more overwhelmingly pro-Sanders. That's the end of the time. Phenomenon the Sanders campaign did. I mean, there's here's somebody unknown, came from nowhere, practically no one in the country knew who he was. He was using words like socialism, which used to be a real curse word. No corporate support, no media support, no support from the wealthy. Everything that has always been crucial to winning elections, mostly we have bought elections, had none of it and practically took over one of the two major parties. It could have taken it over if it hadn't been for shenanigans, you know. And it was primarily driven by young people. All of these are very hopeful signs. I mean, there are plenty of things that can be done. There are opportunities that can be grasped, and no time to run through them, but there are plenty of them. And it's really very much in our hands and among the younger of you in your hands to carry us forward in this long path, long, arduous path towards trying to create a civilized society and a decent world.
I recommend checking out that whole talk on Democracy Now! It really is an enlightening conversation. There are two things there to break down. Number one is the establishment is having trouble keeping the lid on us at this point. So that's a positive sign. The negative sign is the Democratic Party is completely and utterly broken. So it's amazing. You have this rise among millennials, among independents, among the people, this tide of populism and progressivism. But you have the party that's supposed to be most open to that, and the party that's supposed to be driven by that, they're tone deaf, and they don't hear it, and they keep going in the Hillary Clinton direction, they keep going in the Obama direction, they keep going in the direction of the establishment corporatist centrist Democrats. And the good news that Chomsky is sharing is the wave cannot be stopped. And now it's going to require a lot of hard work. It's going to require a lot of effort, a lot of sweat, you know, a lot of protests, a lot of organization. It's going to have to be a gigantic movement. And yes, we all have to dot the I's and cross the T's. But in terms of what the American people feel, what they believe, what millennials feel and believe, what independents feel and believe, the direction of the country in terms of the mood, there is no question. I mean, you look at the opinion polls and the people are overwhelmingly liberal. And I go as far, they're not even center left. They're just left. So you name the issue, I'll show you how they are indeed on the left. There's only, if I'm not mistaken, there's only one major issue where they are not, and that would be the death penalty. The death penalty, they still lean in a conservative direction. But virtually every other issue. So you talk about war, only 17% of the American people still want to be involved in these wars. The war in Afghanistan right now is more unpopular than the war in Vietnam was at its most unpopular point. A majority of the American people say, let's tax the rich more. A majority say, don't cut education, don't cut Social Security, don't cut Medicare under any circumstance. 80% say raise the minimum wage. Again, you name the issue, I will show you. Over 50% want a single-payer universal health care system. So there's not an open question in terms of the feelings of the American people. How do we harness those feelings and move forward and get the positive change that we need, though? And what Chomsky's pointing out there is there was almost a complete and utter collapse of the establishment in this election. You got a guy like Bernie Sanders, a senator from Vermont. Vermont has a grand total of -8 people, but he's somebody that only political junkies knew of. But here's a guy, really old guy. He's a Jewish, maybe atheist, democratic socialist. He's got bad posture. He's never said a political thing or been a polished politician in his entire life. He just goes out there and chews from the hip and speaks from the heart and talks about policy. And this guy was a one-man wrecking ball through the establishment. He went from having no name recognition to getting 47% of the vote against somebody who was already an A-list celebrity when she launched her campaign. The mainstream media was waiting, oh, Hillary, oh, we love Hillary. Everybody loves Hillary. Hillary's the anointed one. Hillary's the one that's going to do it, and there's no question. And this guy came along and won 22 states in the primary. 22 states, 47% of the vote. When the media was biased against him, all the corporate money was biased against him, the DNC was biased against him, trying to hide debate so that nobody sees him and nobody hears his message, and, cutting voting times in certain states and pushing for closed primaries instead of open primaries, because when you open them, then independents vote and millennials turn out and he wins. Everything was biased against him, and he almost won. He almost won. So the establishment is having a hard time keeping the lid on us. How much longer can they keep that up? Now, the only downside to this conversation is there's a race going on. The race is between right-wing populism and left-wing populism. Right-wing populist is Donald Trump. Now, he portrayed himself that way. In fact, when he governs, he might govern as the most establishment candidate in human history, judging by his appointments. But either that or he's an authoritarian wild card and a buffoon, and I think it's actually going to be a mix of both of those things. But he campaigned as a right-wing populist. So right-wing populists don't even necessarily disagree with liberals on economic policy, because when you prod deep enough, they're not, free market ideologues. So in other words, that's why Trump's anti-NAFTA, anti-TPP talk resonated with these people. But they have somewhat liberal economic positions mixed with what? Deep, deep bigotry and xenophobia. So you have bigotry, xenophobia, policies that they support, like deporting all undocumented immigrants, banning all Muslims from coming to the country, doing nationwide stop and frisk, which has a failure rate of well over 90% and disproportionately targets minority communities and takes away their Fourth Amendment rights. So you have one candidate who campaigned more populist, but who's massively xenophobic, bigoted, and authoritarian, where he's kind of openly against civil liberties and the First Amendment. And then you had one candidate who was a civil libertarian, was not authoritarian, and was liberal, was progressive on economic policy, was a democratic socialist. Unfortunately, it worked out that the right-winger ended up winning the election, but the movement must not die. And remember, every time you feel isolated and alone, that's how the establishment wants you to feel. But remember, the opinion polls are with you. So it's just a matter of harnessing that energy and organizing it and fighting until we win. And right now I might feel like, well, we're never going to win because look at what's going on. You got the Republicans in the House of Representatives, the Republicans in the Senate, the Republicans have the presidency, they have the majority of state legislatures and governorships. Yes, the outlook is grim in terms of the government right now, but the sentiment among the people is not grim. The sentiment among the people is we're fed up with this shit, we're tired of this shit. And so it's time for that progressive wave to take over. And that's what Chomsky's referring to. And now it's on us to do the hard work and dot the I's and cross the T's. And he goes on to talk about that further there. So it's on us, as President Obama once said, which is funny because it turns out he wasn't part of this, but you are the change you're waiting for. I'm paraphrasing there, but that is true. You don't have to sit around and say, I can't wait for this thing to come around or that thing to come around in order to make it better and we can latch on to somebody. No, bitch. You can do it yourself. We can all rise up together. We can all do our part. We can all protest. We can all organize at the local level, at the state level, at the national level. We can run progressive candidates. We can have everybody take a pledge. We don't take corporate money, bitch. We take money from the people, and we're going to represent the people. We can have people stand up and say, you know who I believe in? The American people. Look at the polls. That's what I'm going to implement. I'm not going to listen to some corporation in a backroom deal. I'm going to listen to the people, and I'm going to, you know, these numbers are my Bible. This is my gospel. 80% of the American people want the minimum wage. I'm here to represent you. Let's go. Let's go do it. So this is where we have to go from here. Okay, now we go to Michael Savage. Michael Savage is a well-known lunatic radio host. A while back, I actually ranked the dumbest conservative hosts, and he was number one. That's amazing, because that list is filled with geniuses. Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, you know, they all look like Noam Chomsky next to this guy. I mean, he's that bad. So you're going to get a good understanding of why that is here, why he got number one on that list. Here he is discussing the future under Donald Trump.
I remember when Trump won that night. The next day I woke up, I looked at the sky. The sky looked as though it had opened up. The sky looked clear. It looked. A friend of mine said, it's as though a portal to another world had opened up for all of us. We were no longer living in this closed world that this monster in the White House had created in this free nation. This interloper, this phony, this monster, what he had done to this nation. He had created the greatest spy apparatus the world had ever seen, and he gets away with it with that sick smile of his, hiding behind his wife and children, the nice guy Obama, and the rats in the media like Wolf Blitzer say nothing. You don't know the rage I have for them. You don't know what I would do if I had the power. You don't know what I would do if I had the power. You have no idea. And that's why I made a decision many years ago, because I have such rage against the machine that I would stay where I am. Even if I had the opportunity to inveigle my way into a government, I would not want that power, because I would probably use it like a hammer on an anvil to get even with these people and what they've done to this fine country. That's how I feel about it. So I'm glad I have no power. I'm glad I am only a voice on the outside looking in. I'm one of the outraged Eddies out there. Let me tell you, I'm not that happy today, but I feel differently today about the country. I don't walk around fearing that it's all coming to an end. I don't walk around looking at little white children, to be honest with you, seeing future slaves anymore. Did you know that? Did you know that that's what I used to see? I'd walk around and look at little white children, and I'd shake my head and I'd say, if this doesn't stop, these children will be slaves in their own nation.
What? Why people were going to be slaves until Donald Trump came in and he saved it? Oh, thank goodness. I didn't want to be a slave, so wow, Trump, thank you so much. Now I know that when I'm 43, I will still be a free human being. No, I don't know how anybody can take guys like this serious, but they do. There are people who take him serious. They listen to him and they go, yeah, I think he's nailing it. I think white people were going to be slaves in the future. That's almost so stupid that I don't know how to rebut it. Like, if you were to look at the numbers, the statistics of people in government, what percentage of them are white males? It's the overwhelming majority. Now, I think the majority of the country is white male, or maybe I'm wrong about that. I know the majority of the country is white, but I don't know if
white male would make over 50%. That's neither here nor there. Worst case scenario, it's a plurality of white males. So in other words, compared to every other demographic group, there are more white males, and that actually shows in power, and if anything, it's disproportionate in our direction. It's disproportionate in the white male direction, that there are probably more white males in power than, you know, what the population of white males is. So what are you talking about? We have power. We've had all but one president. There's only been one president who's a black man, and there still hasn't even been a female president. It's been white males. It's an ocean of white males. This guy's like, come on. I mean, white males, we were going to be slaves. Little white kids. I looked at little white kids and said, they're going to be slaves. They're going to be slaves. This guy talks like somebody who has literally never had a conversation with a minority in his entire life. Like, you have not even any friends. Like, that's usually the dodge when somebody says some racist shit. They're like, I can't be racist. I have a black friend. That's not really the best counterargument ever. Sounds kind of goofy. But he can't even say that because it sounds like he doesn't have any black friends. He doesn't have any minority friends at all. They're going to make us slaves. I looked at the white kids and said slaves. They're going to be slaves. How off this fucking rocker. I mean, this shows you paranoid, crazy, fearmonger, and stupid. And he probably is just making a lot of this shit up and acting. So let's go through some of the other stuff he said there. He said when Trump won, the sky opened up. The sky was more clear. Right. I know these guys, man, whenever one of their people wins, it's, oh, divine intervention, and this is God's work. Really? So where was God in 08 and 2012? You say, well, God's omnipotent. He controls everything. You say it. I don't say it. You say it. So God's omnipotent, except what? He was on a coffee break from 2008 until 2016. So the entire time Obama was in office, it was a mulligan. God missed. God was aiming for John McCain or Mitt Romney, and he missed. What are you going to do? So Obama won. So what is it? Does God pick everybody or does he not pick everybody? Well, he only picks the ones that you like, and he's on break the other times. I know. Please. Oh, God, they're so stupid. How is this convincing anybody? So apparently Trump, metaphysical nonsense. And then he said Obama created the greatest spy apparatus the world has seen. Now understand something. He expanded it, so I go after him for the NSA all the time. I put that in the lose category for him. That goes on the negative side of his legacy, and in the future we'll do a report card on Obama's entire time in office. But he didn't create it. Bush created it. And when Bush created it, you loved it. I'm not kidding. Same thing with Sean Hannity. These guys, when it was created under Bush, the arguments they made were, oh, I guess you hate America. You don't want to protect the homeland if you want to get rid of this NSA spying apparatus because it's just used to get terrorists. But so it was to protect the homeland under Bush, and just to get terrorists, and it's the right thing to do, it's for our safety under Bush, under Obama, oh my God, spy apparatus is looking at everybody as the worst thing ever, we got to get rid of it, it's unconstitutional. Can you be fucking consistent for once in your life? So what did I say? I was consistent. Under Bush, I said, I'm against the NSA spying, that's unconstitutional, that's not okay. Under Obama, I say, I'm against it, that's unconstitutional, that's not okay. It doesn't change with the fucking administration and the party in power, because I'm not an idiot, I actually care about the issues, I'm not a partisan hack prick like you. And then finally, I love when they accidentally just let their card show real quick. He said, I would use power like a hammer on an anvil. So, and by the way, in the rest of that rant, you only got a little piece of it there. He goes on. In the rest of it, he keeps going, oh my God, Obama is so authoritarian and he's so bad and he's a unitary executive and he uses all of his power without going through Congress and he's, you know, so extreme, it's like fascism, it's like this, it's like that. So that's his argument. And then he goes on to say, you just heard it, I would use power like a hammer on an anvil. He's like, I'm glad I don't have power because I would use it to crack down on my enemies. So what's going on there? Yet again, projection. So he talks to the Democrats, oh my God, they're so authoritarian. Oh, if I had power, I'd be so authoritarian, it'd be awesome. Well, which is it? Is authoritarianism good or is authoritarianism bad? No, in your mind, you love being authoritarian. You accuse all your enemies of being authoritarian. And you let it slip right there, you fucking colossal moron. He's like, oh, yeah, authoritarianism, bad, bad, bad. Oh, I'd love to do it. I mean, bad, bad, wrong. Dude, you're the authoritarian. You're the devil you're trying to avoid. You are everything you say is horrible about your enemies. And this is, I mean, Michael Savage, he's the guy who said on his, he had an MSNBC show at one point. He said on his show, by the way, he would take live callers, and somebody called him out for something, and he said, "I hope you get AIDS and die." And he would rail against the homosexuals, the gays. Come to find out, he wrote a semi-autobiographical book. It was a character that was basically based on his life, and he spoke about how he's attracted to men. Classic Republican hypocrisy. Get AIDS and die. Goddamn homos. Terrible. I hate the gays. Anyway, can somebody put a cock in my mouth? I'd really appreciate that. I'm so attracted to it. Okay. Next. Charles Krauthammer is what passes for an intellectual on the right, and he has some thoughts on the UN condemning Israel for violating international law. Let's see what he has to say.
Most Americans are not aware of the fact that we pay about a quarter of the freight of the UN. So we're paying
22% something.
We're paying an organization that spends half its time, more than half its time, and energy and resources and bureaucracy trying to attack the only Jewish state on the planet, a tiny little speck, while genocide, mayhem, murder, terrorism is going on all over the world. It's an obsession that to an outside observer appears to be insane. Why are we doing this? And the rest of the time is spent undermining the United States and democracy and our allies around the world. It is an organization that exacerbates tensions. It does not assuage them. It was born in hope. The end of the Second World War, it turned out to be a disaster. Any move to minimize our support for it, any move to get it out of the U.S. Imagine if headquarters were in Zimbabwe, the amount of weight and coverage it would get would be zero. I think that's good real estate in downtown New York City, and Trump ought to find a way to put his name on it and turn it into condos.
So in other words, maybe we should eliminate the United Nations because they dared to say that Israel should follow international law. Head meet ass. I mean, come on, man. You guys, they're throwing a fucking tantrum. They're like a bunch of babies in the wake of this vote at the UN. It's not anti-Semitism or bigotry or bad people who are picking on poor little Israel. All they want to do is do occupation and apartheid. Leave Israel alone. No, there's a reason why it was a 14-0 vote. There's a reason why the U.S. had to perpetually shield Israel from all criticism at the UN for the longest time, because everybody knows what they're doing is wrong. Everybody knows they keep building more and more settlements and taking more and more Palestinian land and doing more oppression and doing apartheid, and every now and then Netanyahu goes into Gaza and does a fucking bomb fest and kills over 80% civilians and gets women and children. Over 500 kids died the last time. So everybody looks at that and they go, oh, come on, man. What the fuck? You're backed by the United States of America. You just got $38 billion in military aid. And you're going to say, oh, we're the victim of Hamas, big bad Hamas. They fucking fire bottle rockets at your ass. They got nothing compared to you. Now, they shouldn't fire those rockets, duh. But they got nothing. They got dick. You got the world's most powerful military in human history behind you. And, you know, you're the military force and power in the region. You keep taking more land as you play the victim. We're sick of it. We're fucking sick of it. And then Charles Krauthammer goes, oh, dude, Trump should turn the UN into condos because they said Israel needs to follow international law. That's undermining our allies. Notice when he said that. Like, all the UN does is undermine us and our allies and democracy. The fuck are you talking about, son? What are you talking about? So, but that's the thing is, it's all about allies, our allies versus people who are our enemies. So in Charles Krauthammer's mind, the UN should just serve U.S. interests, full stop. So in other words, did you see Charles Krauthammer melt down when Saudi frickin' Arabia was appointed to the UN Human Rights Panel? No. Why didn't he melt down? Because that's our ally. So they get to do what they want. Israel gets to continue expanding. Israel gets to continue occupying. Israel gets to violate international law with impunity, and you need to shut the fuck up because they're our allies, so they're in the interest of democracy. Even when they act authoritarian, they're in the interest of democracy. That's the argument. So Saudi Arabia on the Human Rights Panel, they're a vicious, brutal terrorist state that says all atheists are terrorists and treats women like second-class citizens and arms al-Qaeda and, you know, took part in 9/11, helped fund 9/11. Well, you know, they're our allies. So, no, Charles Krauthammer doesn't melt down when Saudi Arabia gets to head the UN Rights Panel. Because, again, our allies get to do whatever. Saudi, you get to be on the Human Rights Panel. Israel, you get to violate international law. We get to do whatever. Anybody who's our enemy, oh, that's – we, you know – crush them. We rain holy hell on them. But you're the exact reason why the UN needs massive reform and is a little bit of a joke right now. Charles, you're the reason. Because the organization you're trying to create is a puppet organization for the U.S. military. So the U.S. military gets to do whatever we want, our allies get to do whatever we want, and people who are our enemies, they need to, you know, genuflect at the altar of our power. So even if they do, and by the way, like, oh, he's so sad, oh my God, they keep singling us and our allies out. So what? You're talking about when they didn't approve of the Iraq war? Bitch, that's the least they could do. Like, this idea of, like, well, we're not in favor of it. That's the UN on the war in Iraq. He's like, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo! I mean, obviously, for you to be a legitimate organization, you have to approve of our illegal war that goes in and occupies a country that didn't attack us and kills hundreds of thousands of civilians and sets up a worldwide torture regime. No, see, in order for the UN to do the right thing and to fully be reformed, it has to call out everybody for their violations of international law. So they're not wrong to call out Israel. They're indeed correct to call out Israel. They also should call out Saudi Arabia. They should kick them off the Human Rights Panel. And they should call out us when we violate international law. And we do it all the fucking time. But in Charles Krauthammer's mind, no, if you criticize us or our allies, well, then Trump should turn you into fucking condos. So get rid of an important, necessary international organization in order to have the U.S. be a rogue, have the U.S. military run everything, and not even have the pretense of international cooperation. Just do it all cowboy style. That's what he wants. This is neoconservatism on steroids and human growth hormone. That's what this is. And that ideology will get us nothing but another gigantic world war. So we got to have the lines of communication open. We got to talk to people, and we should do resolutions against everybody that violates international law. And if that means, you know, sanctioning 90% of the places on Earth, great, let's do it. That's the whole idea of having this international body, to prevent the worst-case scenarios and say, hey, stop being assholes, people. But no, Charles Krauthammer, God forbid you ever go after our allies or us. Well, then you're illegitimate by definition, because whatever we do is right, and Trump should turn you into condos. You're a fucking silly person, Charles. You're a joke. It's hilarious that people think you're an intellectual. You're the furthest thing from an intellectual. Okay. All right, final break. When we come back, we have a classic Republican hypocrisy, a South Carolina family values person. Wait until you hear what he's been up to. And we got some right-wing political correctness for you and crackdowns on abortion. You don't want to miss any of that stuff. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
the left. I feel like I'm the leper, nigga, left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, you will fake so I'm gon' grab you with the left, I feel like I'm the leper, nigga, left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself.
What's up, bitches? We're back. All right. Let's give you a good taste in your mouth here as you leave the show. That sounded gross. Oops. Okay. So Democrats recently staged a sit-in in Congress to try and get gun reform. And after, I think, 25 hours total, they buckled. Now, I went after them for that, but the Republicans decided, oh, that's cute, so you gave up, as you always do, because you're Democrats, and that's you do nothing but buckle to us, that's your whole role. They decided they're going to put their boot on the throat of Democrats now. So the Hill explains here, the most controversial proposal in the rules package for the new Congress would fine lawmakers who take photos or videos on the House floor, which was already prohibited. Members virtually never faced actual punishment for taking pictures on the House floor in the past, such as during the State of the Union, even though it violated the chamber's rules. But if lawmakers try to snap photos or stream video starting in 2017, they would face a $500 fine for the first offense and $2,500 fine for any subsequent offenses. The fines would be deducted from the members' annual salaries. So this is the Republican saying, oh, that's adorable. So you guys wanted to actually fight like a little bit, fight like 3%? Well, now we're going to kill you. Now we're going to destroy you. Now we're going to own you. And that's what they're doing here. Now the Democrats have done a lot of barking in response, like, oh, yeah? Well, we're not going to stop. Yeah, I'm sure you're not going to stop. No, I know you're going to stop. You're definitely going to stop because that's what you do. You're Democrats. But this is why, and I caught heat for saying it at the time, but I was right. You shouldn't have stopped then. So they did 25 hours and then they walked away. Why? So you do a sit-in and you're there for only a day and then you leave? What the fuck is that? No, you had to have it planned out where, okay, at the beginning, you three or four or five Democrats, you're the ones that are going to sit here and you have a six-hour shift. And then you work in six-hour shifts. That's it. So, okay, you're here for 6 hours, then the next group is here for 6 hours, then the next group is here for 6 hours. And they had enough people where they could have made that work. They could have made it work. You could have fucking gone, you could have been sitting on the floor with your goddamn toothbrush, looking at your clock, okay, time to brush my teeth, okay, time to read a magazine, time to do this, time to do that. You could have done it, but you didn't do it. You didn't do it because it was symbolic. And by the way, of all the reforms that they pushed for, they didn't even push for the best ones. One of them was the universal background check bill. Totally agree with that. They're 100% right on that. The other one was the no-fly list. Oh, if you're on the no-fly list, you shouldn't be able to buy a gun. Well, look, the no-fly list is a secret government list, and there's no due process. So they put you on that list. They could have no reason at all to put you on that list, and then you can't buy a gun. So there are genuine liberal concerns as to why, hey, that's not a good list to have. The list probably shouldn't even exist, many liberals say. So I'm not even sure that's a good policy that they were pushing for there. So, but either way, you should support the universal background check. You should have pushed for that, and you should have pushed for, I don't know, a high-capacity magazine ban maybe, a giant gun buyback program to get rid of some of the overrun of guns that we have in our streets. Like, this is what you could have done, and you didn't fucking do it. You didn't fucking do it. So instead, they were there for 25 hours, they left, they shook each other's hand, they talked about how great they are, and then that was that. And now the Republicans are like, yeah, that was a cute little thing you pulled. Now watch us crack down on you. Now, so what would I do now if I'm the Democrats? Well, what I'd do is pretty simple. I'd say, I'm going to, as soon as we get back in session, I'm going to go on the floor and have all my pay deducted. I'm going to do it for so long that I will get all of my pay deducted and my salary will be $0. And then you're going to keep finding me and I'll be $1 million in the red and I'll keep doing it. And then this will be a national story. It'll expose you for the fascist that you are. Because what they're doing is So I think, if I'm not mistaken, they shut off all the cameras when the Democrats did the sit-in because it wasn't during normal hours when they did the sit-in. So all the cameras were shut off, and so the Democrats had to take out their cell phones and stuff and record and go, see, we're doing the sit-in. What they're doing is we'll fine you $500, $2,500, whatever, for the first offense, $2,500 for the subsequent offenses. So they're going to fine you $2,500 after you do it once, so, and just deduct it from your pay. Say, okay, so we're going to do it, and we're going to keep doing it, and I'm going to do it every single fucking day, and I'm going to make you not only deduct my pay, but put me $1 million in the hole, and then I'm going to go and do a round of interviews with the media and explain to them how you're fascist, and you don't like civil disobedience, and you don't like civil rights and human rights, and you don't like to save the lives of the American people and do a policy that the American people like. 90% of them are in favor of a universal background check. You're blocking it, and you're docking my pay for fighting for it. So this is what you do, but the Democrats won't do it. They never do it. They're little bitches. We know they're bitches. Sometimes they're corporate sellouts and Wall Street whores, and other times they're weak little bitches. So this is what's going to happen, and it's sad. It's sad that the Republicans can get away with all this shit, and nobody's really going to fight back. So I'm here to give you the news about how weak the Democrats are and how the Republicans are cracking skulls. And again, I'll reiterate this point. That's why we need to be the people who step up and say, not on my watch, motherfucker. We're the next wave of liberals to get control and to show the Democrats how it's done and put the Republicans in their place. Okay, next. So women's rights were under a stunning attack in 2016. Jordan Smith of The Intercept explains here. More than 60 new restrictions on access to abortion were passed by 19 states in 2016, according to a year-end report from the Center for Reproductive Rights. I mean, think about that, man. 60 new restrictions in 19 states. They continue. The regulations run the gamut from attempts to ban abortion altogether to excessive paperwork requirements for providers and measures that would restrict the donation of aborted fetal tissue for medical research. Now, it's not just this. Remember, we covered the story. I think there's been over 20 attempts at doing the funerals for miscarriages move, that loathsome scumbag move that the Republicans do. They want to disincentivize abortion, so they pass these laws that say, well, if you have an abortion or if you have a miscarriage or whatever it is, we're going to make you have like a funeral, a ceremony. Oh, what are you doing? Now, this, understand this is targeted and this is for a specific reason. The whole idea behind this, they call these trap laws. Targeted restriction of abortion procedure. That's what it stands for. Targeted restriction of abortion procedure. And what they do is, it's the oldest trick in the book. You purposefully overregulate. So you say, oh, I know we're the party that's supposed to be against regulation and supposed to be for small government, but now we're in favor of the biggest government imaginable. And you know how the Republicans always complain about red tape, unnecessary burdensome regulations that the Democrats pass? Well, typically the Democrats are for regulations that are just reasonable regulations. The Republicans do the red tape. So one thing that they do is they'll take these clinics where they don't even perform actual abortions, where they, for example, hand out the abortion pill, and they say, no, you need to by law have a surgical room here. What? But they don't do surgeries. We don't care. That's the new regulation. Or they'll go into an abortion clinic and they'll go, oh, that's cute. We just measured the height of your ceilings. Your ceilings are 7.5 feet tall. They got to be 8 feet in order for you to keep your doors open. It's a new regulation. We just passed it, so get to work. So then they have to do fucking hundreds of thousands of dollars in renovation in order to keep the fucking doors open. Another trick they do is they go, oh, you need to get hospital admittance privileges, and you can only get it from this hospital, the nearest hospital to you. And then what happens? People go in, it's a Catholic hospital, and they go, we don't give admittance privileges to abortion providers. We're against abortion. Or they'll fuck with the timing of it. Oh, you need to get admittance and privileges, and you need to get it by 2 weeks from now. And then they go to the hospital, and they say, well, the process takes 2 months, so we can't have it by then. Well, then you got to shut your doors. Anything and everything to try to
ban abortion without saying legally we are banning abortion. You can't do that because it's unconstitutional. So they got to come up with dirty, sleazy tricks. And they say, okay, let's try to overregulate. Let's try to do this. Let's try to do that. And let's make it so that it's a living hell for abortion providers. And you disincentivize anybody from ever getting an abortion again. And this is all so disgusting, too, because when you look at the statistics for abortion in the U.S., we've discussed this before, it's over 98%, 99% of abortions that happen, they occur before 20 weeks in the U.S., which means there's no fetal, nervous system developed in the fetus, so there's literally no pain. And it's over 90% of abortions that happen before 12 weeks. So you're really talking, I mean, most of the abortions in the U.S., you're probably going all the way back to fucking gametes and zygotes. I mean, so this isn't, it's fundamentally not the same thing as murder, as these fucking lunatics would call it, but that's all they got, is hacky arguments. Oh, you're doing murder. But they're not doing murder. Oh, yeah, but we're going to pretend you are, and then we're going to take away your rights. So again, small government, small government, small government. They say they love it, but in some ways, they want the biggest government possible. This is one of the ways right here to screw with women and their own reproductive choices. They want the biggest government imaginable. Imaginable? Is that a word? Why am I struggling on this right now? They want the biggest government imaginable. I think that's a word. Brain fart. In order to bail out Wall Street. So when it comes to bailing out Wall Street, give me a gigantic, tremendous government. When it comes to military, yeah, we want to invade everywhere. Give me the biggest military possible. So all the talk about small government, it's nonsense. It's just a talking point. When it comes to you, when it comes to things that help you, then they want small government. They want, as I think it was Martin Luther King said, they want rugged, individualistic capitalism for you, and they want socialism for them. Socialism for the rich, big government for the rich, big government for their buddies, and big government to control everybody's lives. But small government when it comes to being a decent person and caring about human rights. Okay. Next. Classic story of Republican hypocrisy for you. Let's break this one down. We have a classic story of GOP hypocrisy for you. Raw Story breaks this down. South Carolina Republican State Representative Chris Corley was arrested on Tuesday for allegedly beating a woman who reportedly caught him cheating. Deputies from the Aiken County Sheriff's Office were called to Corley's home on Monday, where a woman accused him of hitting her in the face and threatening to kill her children. She told deputies that Corley beat her with a closed fist until he noticed blood coming from her head and heard her children screaming. She said that Corley retrieved a handgun from his car and then came back into the home and pointed it at her. Corley threatened to kill himself and then went into the bedroom. So you have a Republican state representative here, party of family values, and this is yet another example, example number 9,762, of intense hypocrisy. They're judging gay people left and right. Oh, I'm against gay marriage. They shouldn't have the right to do it. It's between a man and a woman. It's a sacred thing. And then what are they doing? They're beating women. This guy, again, he is a South Carolina Republican state representative, and he cheated, and then he beat a woman's ass. What? That's insane. Usually you hear a story of, like, she cheated, and okay, now I'm mad, and he attacks her. No, he cheated, and then she questioned it, and then he snaps, and he starts hitting people. So this reminds me of, and actually, you know what, this isn't even a fair comparison, but I'm going to make it anyway. So this reminds me of Scott Desjarlais. You remember him? Now, this guy is admittedly worse. Chris Corley's worse because this involves violence, and that's a whole other level of grotesque. But Scott Desjarlais is a guy who's a family values Republican representative. And he had multiple mistresses. He is a doctor, and he would prescribe drugs to patients to get high. And he also made his mistresses get abortions. Notice how I put an S at the end of it? It's plural. So pro-life. Oh, I'm pro-life. I'm anti-abortion. Yeah, let me tell you. Made his mistresses get abortions. Got reelected in a landslide. So everything he said, family values, you know, pro-life, all that stuff, his voters saw, he didn't believe any of it, and he's just a massive hypocrite. But because he's a Republican, and he's in a very Republican area, they were like, well, you know what, God's going to forgive everybody. Could you imagine President Obama did what this guy did? Can you imagine President Obama had mistresses, prescribed drugs to people to get them high, sold drugs to people to get them high, and his mistresses got abortions? Would they say, oh, yeah, you know, it happens. Forgiveness. Jesus is all about forgiveness. Forgive the black Democratic president with the Muslim-sounding name. They would never. But for one of their own, he's a good Christian. He's a good white guy. Scott Desjardins. You know, Jesus is all about forgiveness. So, you know, I draw the line at, like, five abortions. If you have, like, five abortions with your mistress, then it's not okay. But you got two, maybe three. Whatever, you know? God's all about love. All about love. It's so sad, man, to watch this. So you got guys beating the ass of women, physically assaulting women, Republican representatives, as they scream about family values. You got them selling drugs, doing drugs, having abortions. But again, as long as you got that R before your name, it's okay. And the answer as to why that is tribalism. Because they already determined you're on their team. So if you're on their team, you get to do whatever you want. And you see this in international politics, too. Oh, we did the Iraq War. It was an offensive war against a country that didn't attack us, killed hundreds of thousands of people. We occupied that country, and we set up a worldwide torture regime. It's okay. We did it. We're good. They're bad. So it's okay. It's okay. Oh, our guy beat a woman's ass? It's okay. It's okay. We're good. They're bad. So it's okay. If a Republican does it, yeah, forgiveness. Forgiveness. Scott Desjardins, yeah, forgiveness. Forgiveness. No. How about you actually stick by your principles and be consistent? I won't hold my breath. We often talk about the issue of political correctness. It's something that I'm certainly against, and we've been fighting it fairly vociferously for a while now. But understand that I'm against it in all its forms. So that's something that, and I'm not just tooting my own horn here, even though that's a side effect, but it's rare. You rarely see people who self-describe as conservative or self-describe as liberal where they go, okay, you know, I'm against political correctness and I hate it from everybody who does it. Usually it's whenever it's a political issue that they're sympathetic to. If somebody gets all PC for that, it's, ooh, okay, this one's okay, let this one slide. Well, I disagree with that. So we have a pathetic example here of the right-wing PC police. The Guardian reports, the biggest U.S. police union is pressing Amazon to follow Walmart and remove from third-party sale a shirt that seeks profit in relation to the Black Lives Matter protest movement. The shirt, which carries the words Bulletproof, Black Lives Matter, was removed from online sale by Walmart on Thursday after the Fraternal Order of Police said it was, quote, offensive. Let me be crystal clear about this. I don't give a fuck what you think is offensive. I don't care what you think is offensive. Just the other day, we did a story where on a college campus, conservative students were forced to take down these posters that they had up, which said, unborn lives matter. Now, that's not something I agree with, because what they're doing is they're trying to pretend like a zygote or a gamete or a fetus has the full rights of a human being, and it's an anti-abortion message, and they're trying to kind of smear the Black Lives Matter movement a little bit there. So I don't agree with them. But the liberal students protested and got the school to make the conservative students take down the posters. I don't agree with that. That's restricting free speech. Let them keep their fucking shitty posters up. I don't give a shit. Why does it not work both ways, though? Everybody who is angry about that, and again, that's an area where I was agreeing more with the conservatives, not because I agree with the message, but because I agree with their right to push the message. Well, in this case, hey, conservatives, where are you? All the people who rant against the PC police and social justice warriors, where the fuck are you? Here you have quite literal right-wing PC police, because they're police, saying we don't like Black Lives Matter, so take down that shirt. What the fuck? Who gives a fuck if you like it? You don't like it? Don't buy it, dipshit. That doesn't mean you take away other people's right to buy it. Come on, man. This stuff is basic. This stuff is obvious. How many times? We did a story once. There was a kid wearing an NRA shirt who was at school. And the teachers told him, you got to take it off or go home or change or something. And I said, no, let the kid wear the NRA shirt. I don't agree with the NRA. Fuck the NRA. But I'm not going to make him fucking take the shirt off. It clearly falls within free expression and free speech. So, but what I need to see is I'm done with these fucking morons on both sides who either I'm against every fucking authoritarian leftist position on a college campus where they try to censor speakers and ban them from coming, whether it be Ben Shapiro or Milo Yiannopoulos. Either you're on that side and, you know, fuck the left-wing PC police, or you say fuck the right-wing PC police. I need people to say fuck all the PC police because none of them are okay. But I sense this overwhelming hypocrisy on the right about this because it's like Donald Trump himself. This is a guy who sued Bill Maher over a joke. He sued Bill Maher over a joke. He threatened to sue The Onion over a satire piece. Are you fucking kidding me? He said we should, quote, open up the libel laws so he can sue the media. He said he wants England's speech laws, not the U.S.'s. Why? England's are more restrictive. He's banned. He had a media blacklist. If you cover him in a way that he doesn't like, you're banned from covering him on the campaign trail. And then this is a guy who's held up as some sort of paragon, some sort of beacon of free speech, and somebody who slams social justice warriors. He's not slamming them. He is one. He's a right-wing social justice warrior, or as my friend Leon says, a social injustice warrior. He is the right-wing PC police. And if you can't see that, you're fucking blinded by your fandom, and it's really, really sad, and you kind of sound like an idiot because you are an idiot. Okay. All right, and finally, last story of the day here. The AFP has an incredibly depressing story out of the Middle East, they report here. A Saudi man has been jailed for 1 year for calling for an end to the Muslim kingdom's guardianship system that gives men wide control over women. The man, who was also fined $8,000 by a court in the eastern city of Dammam, was convicted of inciting to end guardianship of women in statements he posted on Twitter and in public posters. All right, so all this guy did, he would go around, he would hang these posters. Hey, maybe we should question this guardianship system here. Women in his family had been abused. He's like, I don't like it. So he's hanging posters saying, eh, we should have a conversation about this. He obviously said some stuff on Twitter in various public forums. And he was arrested and convicted of inciting to end guardianship of women. Stop and think about that shit. Good googly moogly. Inciting to end guardianship of women, even having the opinion that maybe women shouldn't be second-class citizens, is illegal in Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia is on the human rights panel at the UN. Head meet ass. Are you kidding me? What the fuck? This is the most brazen, disgusting violation of human rights I've ever seen in my life. This is an openly, overtly, brazenly, blatantly sexist move. I mean, you're just going to say, and they're doing it because of Islamic fundamentalism. What they're saying is, hey, man, look, we're literalists, we're Salafists, and the bottom line is, this is so not debatable, even if you disagree with us, we're going to lock you up. I mean, think about that. Do you have any idea? If I did one show in Saudi Arabia, I could probably, there's probably enough charges in that one show to get me locked up for life or to just have me beheaded. In fact, I know. If I do any story that involves religion and I say, I don't believe it. There's no evidence for God, so I don't believe it. They could behead me in the public square. They say all atheists are terrorists. I am a terrorist by definition if I step foot in Saudi Arabia. So, and this is the country that we're going to be allies with, top allies with. And then we pretend like we care about human rights and we care about freedom and we care about liberal values. It's all about money. It's all about power. It's all about imperialism. It's all about keeping the world order as it is. And guess who's on top, bitch? We are. So if that means we got to have some unholy alliances, well, so what? We team up with the biggest terrorist state on the planet, a a state where it's illegal to even say, hey, maybe we should treat women equally. It's illegal to even say, maybe we should treat women equally. I'm going to repeat that again because I have trouble digesting it. It's illegal to say, maybe we should treat women equally. Unacceptable. You want to talk about sanctions, bitch. You want to talk about a resolution. Do a resolution against Saudi Arabia. Do it right now. Do sanctions against Saudi Arabia. Untangle our relationship with them. We give them weapons and money. They give it to Al-Qaeda in Yemen. They give it to other jihadists in Syria. They're bombing women and children in Yemen right now. They're bombing mosques. They're bombing hospitals. They're bombing schools. They're bombing schools for the blind. Open-air markets. This is a terrorist regime through and through. And that's all talking foreign policy stuff there. This is what they're doing at home to their women. Are you kidding me? So this is just gross, man. A guardianship system. If a woman wants to do anything, daddy, can I do it? My great husband, can I do it? Fuck that shit, man. Fuck that. And you can't even speak out against it. Unbelievable. Okay. All right, guys, out of time. Love you, baby. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Much love. Mwah. Kisses. I'm Outskies. Peace.